106 FM Talk 106.5. Mobile Mornings, Sean Dalton, Dr. Bill Kane. Of course, you, phone lines are open for you at 343-0106, 343-0106. Segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. That's my buddy Trey, and they are wide open and working. And we know that we've all spent enough time to... I know personally we've found like five new projects we want to do around the house.
Is that all?
Yeah, that's at this point. But hey, the day is young. We'll see where we end up. A lot of times when you're looking at the projects ahead, there's junk in your way. If you're trying to get organized, get cleaned up, get something new, that's where my buddy Trey at 1-800-GOT-JUNK can come in and just move things along in a very fast fashion. Could be junk inside a house, could be junk outside a house. I've talked about this in the past, that you kind of get this idea when you think 1-800-GOT-JUNK, like boxes in a storage unit or boxes from stuff out of your house. I get that. At the same time, Trey and the crew, big stuff they can handle too. You got the swing set in the backyard, the full redwood swing set with the slide and the pirate's lookout, and your youngest child's in their 30s. Let that go. Let it go. Train the crew. Come take it down. Get rid of it. Maybe it's a storage building in the backyard you want cleaned out, or heck, you want the whole storage building gone. He can handle that as well. If you've got junk, you need it removed, you need 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Mobile, Baldwin County's. Trey's been doing this for 12 years now, and he's fantastic at what he does. That's why people call on him. And you can go online, make an appointment, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com, or pick up the phone and call 1-800-GOT-JUNK. A big local, big company, but a local franchisee and local small business, and a guy we know personally around here that we've used at the station and at our homes. That's Trey, and it's 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Once again, online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. Also, they sponsor the online opinion poll question, which we have left up for, well, a couple days now. Should Governor Ivey reopen Alabama before April 30th? 52% of y'all say yes, 48% say no. I love when things are that close. Mm-hmm. I think that makes things interesting. And, you know, you look at the pushback, even the president talking about Governor Kemp in Georgia reopening too early. Will Governor Ivey be seen as a, you know, wise on this? Will she be celebrated that she's holding off for the opening till it looks like the 1st of May? Now, the legislature is going to go back May 4th. But, you know, the last thing she had said, I think, officially was April 30th. So that would be the last day of the stay-at-home order. So people will be back, I would think, unless something changes, to at least not sheltering in place starting on the beginning of May.
Yeah. Now, medically, I don't know what's the right decision to make or not. I'll just be upfront with that. But I think politically...
You mean you don't... Not like all the people on Facebook that fancy themselves armchair epidemiologists physicians? And
I've been following this every day, as many stories as I can read about when it's safe to open the economy, what medicines might help, what might, you know, going outside help. But as far as what will actually do the trick, I have no idea. But I do think that politically, with Governor Ivey waiting a week after some of these other states begin to open, like Georgia, they're starting their reopening of the economy today. I think it's, you know, if things go wrong, which hopefully they don't, that I think it is a good move for Ivey to wait maybe 1 week past these other states that are opening, especially as we see over the last 3 days, Alabama has had our highest number of deaths. Now, I do think we need to reopen the economy in Alabama safely, but as far as the eyes of the nation being on you, maybe not the worst idea to wait 1 week after these. If she pushes it back further than that, though, I don't know.
Yeah, and there. But how many of these, you know, businesses are going to open on their own and say, to heck with it, and, you know, we're opening up, we got to be open, and how much of that do you take as the governor before you really look bad? Is it a week's worth? What do you think? 343-0106. We'll talk about that. Also, in the House, they did vote to pass the supplement to the CARES Act. A little more money in the kitty there. We'll talk about the no votes surrounding that, as well as sunshine and humidity and their fight against coronavirus. Get to that. All right, go to the phones to start off this hour. Once again, that number, and put this in the your contact list on the phone, just FM Talk 106.5, and the phone number 343-0106. You can use it to text, you can use it to call, and it may not be today, may not be tomorrow, but at some point you may want to drop a text or a phone call to the station, and it'll be ready to go. All right, John is in Mobile. He's first up. Hey, John.
Hey, good morning. First of all, heartfelt condolences on Rennie. What a super guy he was.
Thank you.
My heart goes out to everybody. I've known him for 25 years and just saw him downtown a month before all of this. Just a Mary, I just want everybody to know everybody's thinking about you and praying for you.
Thank you very much.
And all you guys, too, that work with him.
Thank you very much.
I wanted to talk about the most important thing that you're going to see here. Senator McConnell just brought it up, but I've been talking about it for a month since the CARE Act passed, the original. Now, Alabama's getting $1.9 billion from the first CARE Act, and I hope they don't screw Mobile and Ballin as they did with the BPO's tax money. But I want you to think how ironic this is that it's not really ironic, it's just sad. So the hospitality industry wiped out right off the first day it was shut down, okay? We laid off everybody. Government has been proud to say that they have not had to lay off anybody, that they haven't stopped one project. But yet, the first CARE Act is going to give Mobile County $27 million to fill their budget hole. Now, think about this. The private sector was wiped out totally, lost everything, spoilage, all this other industry that was wiped out with it. And out of the probably 80 people I know in the restaurant bar industry, probably two of them have received the first round of the SBA Act. But yet, here we are again going to have government bail government out with the first CARE Act. And now, with this CARE Act, again, counties and cities that have, for instance, that Mobile County has a nine-month surplus, and they were proud of that fact. Well, that surplus is to make up for things like this. And so now the government is first going to come bail out the government before they bail out private businesses.
Yeah, and John, exactly. And John, I had seen that $1.9 billion for the state, and I've been talking about that for a couple of weeks, although this week, and I don't know, this week they said that may not go through as they had talked about it. And I heard Mitch McConnell earlier in the week saying that he would favor states declaring bankruptcy. Now, we've seen municipalities do it, but I wonder if there's a tell there. It seems pretty shocking that he would say that, but the tell might be, hey, we're not going to give the money to the states. We're going to let them declare bankruptcy and do it that way. But, I mean, states declaring bankruptcy, it's a very strange times we live in and a strange precedent to set.
Well, the first CARE Act is already passed, and the money's coming.
The $1.9 billion, I know that it seemed like a sure thing, but there was,
it's unrestricted funds.
It's going to be dumped to the general fund is what the people I've talked to in Montgomery tell me. But then from there, how it's allocated, and, you know, Jefferson County, Birmingham's the only city specifically named in this for Alabama that we get it. Mobile, like you said, and other entities would have to have the blessing of Montgomery to get that money.
Well, and that's why Connie Hudson, the commissioner for District 2, and Jerry Carl both are trying to find a way for local government to help. You know, the local governments need to look like they're sacrificing, and I don't want them to suffer. I don't want anybody to suffer, but the private industry is taking the brunt of all of this, and yet the governments are going to be made whole, which I think is just absolutely wrong. That's why you have a surplus. That surplus is there to make up for shortfalls when we have catastrophic events, whether it's Hurricane Ivan or Katrina, and then you see a bounce back. And so that's why I just think it's so wrong, and I agree with Senator McConnell. I agree with you also. I'm not too sure about states declaring bankruptcy. I don't think that's well. But for some of these states to try to make up for their shortfall that they had in their budgets already before the coronavirus, is going to be something that needs to be looked at after.
Yeah, and one of the places could be those pension plans, and, you know, a state like Illinois or something bankrupting to get out of their payment on it. Appreciate the call. Coming right back, 343-0106, 343-0106. The vote yesterday, the House passing the supplement to the CARES Act, but there were some no votes in the mix as well. Why they no voted, we'll put it in their own words coming up.
The yeas are 388, the nays are 5, with one present.
All right, that was the vote yesterday in the House for a supplement to the CARES Act that, at least on the PPP side, ran out of money a week ago today. And people were in the pipeline, small businesses in the pipeline, they'd already made their filings, and they were told, well, it's out of money. You think they would have projected better than that. And I asked this of Congressman Byrne earlier in the week, and he said, well, they're fixing it now with this. But don't you I know that they were trying to get this done as quickly as possible with the CARES Act at first, but You think there would have been some way to say what is the average, how many small businesses over the 50 states? What's the average capitalization? What do you think payroll might be? Get a little closer. I mean, the low hanging fruit are the Shake Shacks, you know, getting the money and Ruth's Chris or Harvard and Ohio State, which I think have given back the money. Oh, the Harvard thing, give me a break with their endowment.
They're poor.
You know, everybody, you know, going to get their money running through it quickly. But you think there might have been a better sense in the projection. And the next question I have is, okay, you've put this additional supplement in, $330 billion, I think, specifically for the small businesses in this. What happens when that runs out?
Oh, no.
Do we do it again?
That'll be enough.
Do we do it again? And do we do it again? When do you say no? And this is not a rhetorical question. It's a real question for you. Do you never say no? Do you? Who's the last business to get in and the door closes and then they'll say, no, we're out of money in this? I mean, is that the best allocation here on this? And at the same time, understand, I'm one of those small businesses. We are one of the small businesses that is, looking for that Paycheck Protection Program. So I'm in this, neck deep as a player in this. But I also have, I think it's fair to ask the question, in this spending, when do you ever say no?
Right.
Who's the last person, who's the last entity to get paid, and who's the first one not to get paid?
And as far as the projections of how much money would have been enough in the first go-around to get this money out to small businesses, that first spending bill, they said $2 trillion. I wonder if they didn't intentionally break this up into more bite-sized pieces to get it across the finish line to start with. You know, if that first one, if they would have went ahead and allocated a full $1 trillion to the Paycheck Protection Program, how would that have flown in the voting? Did they just make it $350 billion to start with in order to get that across the finish line and then knew that they were going to be adding more money coming down the road?
It may be. Instead of saying, hey, this is more than we need and there'll be this other allocation sitting out there that'll be spent. Yeah, maybe you can make that argument, but I wonder how many times we're going to have to do this. So in that vote yesterday, you just heard a clip of it. So it was 388-5 for the $484 billion relief package. So it's easier to talk about the 5 than the 388. Mm-hmm. The 5 that voted no on this. And you had 4 Republicans and 1 Democrat casting a no vote. And who is that? Well, that's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's more important than just the no vote. Some of the reasoning, you've heard some of the clips this morning. This is the one that stuck with me most that I heard from yesterday as a reason not to vote for the supplemental money into the CARES Act. Here she was yesterday.
Yeah, this was an interview with Vice TV.
There's a lot that we could be doing right now, but ultimately, I think when we talk about this idea of reopening society, only in America does the president, when the president tweets about liberation, does he mean go back to work? When we, have this discussion about going back or reopening, I think a lot of people should just say, no, we're not going back to that. We're not going back to working 70-hour weeks just so that we could put food on the table and not even feel any sort of semblance of security in our lives.
All right. So there's a lot of hyperbole in there, but there's one big takeaway, and it's an idealistic versus a pragmatic argument that you hear coming out of her mouth, and that is, I think the hyperbole is, everybody says they work 70 hours a week, we clock the real hours. There are people that work 70 hours a week, but let's clock the real number of people that do that. Not saying there aren't. Because there are the people who work 2 or 3 jobs and do these things, but by and large, that's not 90%. It may be 15% of the population or 20. So she says this, and she's making this argument that liberation to her, and correct me if I'm wrong, and folks that are fans or you're liberal out there, I want to hear a fair argument how I'm wrong on this, but sounds like her worldview, not working is liberation. Where in a conservative view, or maybe not even conservative, I think even middle of the road, being able to work and make your way in this life is liberty, is being able to her, the option to work, and it's the way people see work and the way people see, and I think there's if you delve down into what she says, there's a lot of, I could just go on here and say, I can't believe she, But think about it, the essence of that. How do you see it? The liberty, and listen, do I think that President Trump's liberate Minnesota, liberate Michigan, all that tweets really made a lot of sense after he was talking about continuing to stay on this stay-at-home order? No, it didn't. It made little sense to me on that. But if you drill down into what she's saying, liberty to Ocasio-Cortez is to remain on a government unemployment system and not have to go to work. Am I wrong? And to me, I see it as, yes, it is liberty to open states back up. Number one, the choice of localized government to say open back up, and the liberty of Americans to get back to whatever they do, butchers, bakers, candlestick makers, and make a way for themselves in this economy. And I think what you're seeing there is just in that one little clip, a cavern, a canyon, the Grand Canyon between the way some Americans see liberty and the pursuit of happiness in this country and the way Ocasio-Cortez and others see it.
Yeah, I think the four Republicans that voted no probably voted no because to them it was too much spending.
Too much spending, yeah.
And I think for her, she voted no partly because it's not enough spending on the certain things that she wants government money to be spent on. I mean, we know that she wants free college education for everyone. She wants free health care for everyone. A huge reason she said she voted no on this yesterday was because she wanted rent and mortgage payments to be completely pushed off, to not have to make any of those, which, you know, in some sense, it does make sense.
Is it better to
pay,
push those off, or let people
get back to
work and paying those? And when somebody, once again, I am completely for people that have lost their job through no fault of their own in this situation, using Paycheck Protection Program and the enhancement to unemployment to be able to feed their families, keep the lights on. I completely support that. But for her to say, we don't need to get America open back up, she didn't say anything about health care or anything there,
right,
or disease risk. It's because people have to go back to work in these hours.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so she's telling me that her view of liberty is not going back to work and having these checks. Does it give you more free time? If free time equals liberty, then maybe she has an argument. But to, I think, most Americans, liberty means something a lot deeper than some free time.
I agree completely. And I think everything she does is centered around 2028 or 2024. She's totally playing to her base right here. And what she'll be able to do in the future, as I think the left continues to go further left in the future, I think she'll be able to say, look, all these other Democrats voted for this big bailout for big businesses while I was the only one who voted no, trying to help the common people, in her mind, saying that she's trying to help the common people. I mean, I think her base likes the idea of getting everything free and not having to go to work, while Americans, for, like you said, for decades and centuries, they want to be able to work, to put food on the table for their families,
to be able to make their own decisions. When you have with a job and with money comes liberty of making your own decisions, and that's one of the things. I mean, that's why liberty and free time are very different to me. Free time can be taken away. Right?
No.
Liberty is your ability to find your way in this world, make your money, make your decisions, and exercise your freedom that way. And I think we're getting down, that comment gets down to a very, very core view of life there. And I've wondered this always. Like, if you take twins and raise them in different homes, you know, or give them the same experiences, do their politics go one way or another? Do they change? And I wonder that in the view of many Americans. I at least can stand back and go, I see something so clearly one way, but people see it differently. And why do they see it differently? You can argue that there's people are having to work, 70 hours a week, she said, which, I don't think it's the majority of folks. That's too many hours. Well, then you would, I'd probably agree with some of the populist plans coming out of President Trump and the administration to put in tariffs and work with world trade to less. You would argue that the immigration ban that's being discussed right now would do what? It would bring up wages of Americans, and therefore you would have even more liberty each hour you worked, right? But she's not for that. So it's a tough one to navigate. We'll take your calls on this when we get back. Plus, sunshine. Sunshine is the best disinfectant, right? We've heard that before. That was discussed last night during the presser with the president and the team, Dr. Fauci et al. We'll be right back.
All right, 836 on FM Talk 106.5. You're listening to Mobile Mornings. Let's head over to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Good morning.
Hey, so it's the last week of the month, and that means there's some great deals to check out at McConnell.
Oh, yeah. You know, we got the 0% for 84 months. Got, about 15 cars I bought this week. They should be there today. They're all going to be certified, mostly SUVs that, you know, you could buy around the 20 grand range. Like I said, certified, it gives you an extra 12 on the warranty and bumps that powertrain up to 100,000. We just got stuff going on. We're going to be there today. We got everything clean, perfect. It's going to be a beautiful day. If you had any problems yesterday with your car during all the rain and stuff, you had a little wreck or something, don't forget Gary Turner and all the guys in the body shop. They'll take care of all your insurance needs, take care of your car too. So check us out at McConnellAutomotive.com or give us a call at 251-476-4141.
All right. Thank you, Louie.
Thank you.
As Louie Arata, you'll find him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
Right, 837, and read a couple texts here and get some phone calls as well. I do want to, this first text up from Gamecock Girl. I told her I was just going to steal it, but I'm going to give some attribution here. She said, without being able to choose, there is no liberty. And that's I think that boils down to the core of my question. This is not as simplistic as saying that she voted no yesterday, so she's wrong. There are people vote, but she then goes into describing why she would vote no. And part of it was it wasn't about, did she say in that clip from Vox, or was it Vox or Axios?
Vice.
Vox, Vice, Axios. Okay, so in that Vice piece, what I'm hearing is she's not questioning about number of new cases and opening things back up, danger for healthcare, overwhelming hospitals. She's talking about that it's liberty to not go back to work. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's not even a pragmatic discussion at that point. She's showing, what her core idealism is. And I want to understand from people who believe that where that comes from. Because the same government that could give you that not have to go back to work thing she's calling for, whatever, don't even get in the, I know there'll be a bunch of texts, how much money it costs and we wouldn't be able to do it. I get that part. I'm with you. But we'll stay in idealism land. In that scenario, the same government that gave you that would be able to take it away.
Yeah.
And you get, with work and earning, you get liberty. It's what gives you freedom out there. I think that is as plain as the American spirit, right? Now you can argue working conditions, you can talk about the amount of money you make, and I think if you look at, the policies that, the populist policies President Trump has talked about, I think you would argue that she would support that because it would lead to higher wages for Americans, but then they have to go back to work.
Yeah, and I don't think it's ever been more glaring how quickly the government can, change things for the nation. I mean, we've seen so many people out of work over this last month and so many different guidelines and orders that we probably never saw coming just 6 months ago. And if you are living off the government, like AOC seems to want all of the workers there in New York City to have to do, then yeah, the government could control you at that point because they are your living. You're making your living off of them. And it sounds to me like we already knew that AOC had a problem with the system before all this, entire system.
Yeah, not to make changes to it, but to completely undo it and rebuild it.
And she's seeing this as a good chance for her to make her case that they should rewrite the entire book using this pandemic.
I want to read this one more text here. We'll go to the phones. Text from Dan. Our buddy Dan said, AOC is a literal communist. Let me argue against that for a second, Dan. Because in the communist system, right, that they require people, you do work. You can't, your amount of money you get is fixed. The places and things you can do and jobs, the way your life is unfolded, is determined for you by the government. But you do go to the job.
Yeah, you whatever the
job, whatever the job is. So what AOC is talking about is something even beyond. It's just this thing that your liberty is to be able to stay home and get money. I'm just, once again, I'm thinking we've found something deep in the idealism of AOC that I'm just interested in. Is that the American spirit? All right, to the phones, and dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. We go to Gary, first up in, Gary, you in Mobile?
I'm fishing in Little Lagoon.
Man, you're my hero. Oh, big trout time. Oh, man.
Yep.
Catch me one.
Flounder.
Oh, man, catch me two.
Hey, just to comment on AOC and a lot of other people that keep talking about wanting, quote, free stuff. You know, obviously nothing is of value to free. But I think the problem is a lot of the liberal leaning people, they think when we create these debts, it's funny money, that it really doesn't matter, and this is actual money that has to be repaid to other countries, other government agencies. And it's my understanding the third biggest line item in our federal budget now is interest. And right now, based on the trajectory of our debt, that it'll be the largest budget item in 5 years. And I keep thinking, how much infrastructure, how much health care, yep. how much education, you know, how much more we could spend on those areas if we didn't carry this tremendous debt. It's almost 100% of our annual GDP now.
Yeah, y'all saw that, and that was before the Gary. I think that was even before this. The additional what'll probably be $5 trillion.
It was 22, and now it's going to be what, 24 or 25, whatever.
Who knows? When do they stop? That was my other question. Yeah. If they run out of money, like let's say for PPP on this one, and then there's still businesses that haven't gotten in, are they going to say no to the next supplement?
Yeah. Well, I just think I think a lot of people talk about how great Europe is with their social systems. Well, United Kingdom, their debt is over 300% of their annual GDP, and several other European countries that have robust social systems are in the same category, and they're strangling with this debt. And it's really limiting what they can do in other areas. And I don't know. I just hope we don't go down that same path.
We've at least started down that path. I don't know if we can turn around and go back to the truck or not. But we're getting on it. Gary, I appreciate the call, and I'm jealous, man. I'm jealous. Enjoy your day. Catch some trout and flounder, man. Go to the lagoon and do that. I tell you what, we'll take one more here for the break, though. We're going to hold the break off for a second because I want to go. Let's go to Ricky up next. Hey, Ricky.
What's going on? Look, I've been talking, I've watched Bill Holter, Jim Rickards, and all the top guys. The dollar's dead. They're going to kill the dollar. This is a thing they're planning to do. That's why they're giving all this money out. They're doing all this so they can kill the dollar and bring on a new currency and go back to the silver and gold standard. That's why they're doing all this, and they're telling people on the internet right now they're going to start giving everybody $2,000 a month. You ain't got to worry about going back to work. They're going to have another thing where they start giving people $2,000 a month, and they ain't going to have to pay rent, and they ain't going to have to pay any bills.
So
for 2 years.
Yeah, that would be
over the internet.
That would be there'd be AOC would probably like that a whole bunch.
Yeah, we already Venezuela though. We already nationalized. I mean, they already nationalized the banks and nationalized the country. The whole world is Venezuela right now. Capitalism is dead. The dollar died, and now they're gonna come up with a new system. And they come up with this virus. Did y'all hear about the California doctor this morning talking about they did like a big test now? Less than 0.03% of the people are really, fatal. I mean, all the fake evidence of the virus is coming out. This is nothing but a crash of the dollar. Everybody warned about it. You warned about it. I warned about it. Everybody warned that this can't stay afloat. And for the last 100 years, the Federal Reserve has come to the end of their rope, and they don't have any more. The only plan they have, like with Bill Holter, Gregor Moreno, Jim Rickards, all these guys are the top finance guys. They're telling you what's coming. Those people you need to get on the radio and talk to so they can give you the nuts and bolts of what's really fixing to happen. They're lying to us. They're taking the money. They're bailing out their same buddies, the banks. Everybody's getting bailed out, but we're getting hundreds of dollars. This is a complete ripoff and a new system coming online, and everybody better wake up. And our government is really corrupt. That's the bottom line. They're corrupt, and they're going to bail each other out, and they're going to throw us bones and scrap, and we're going to starve to death. So everybody better get ready.
All right. Well, that a rosy picture here on a Friday from Ricky. Are there some big people getting play? Of course. They've got better lobbyists, but I do know firsthand, and hopefully I'll be able to tell you for us firsthand, of plenty of small businesses here that have gotten their PPP, which is to keep people on the payroll so they can go back to what? Work! Which provides liberty. Be right back. Hey, thank you, Kane. 852 FM Talk 106.5. Still looking through the green lenses of my glass as jealousy Gary's out fishing this morning, which, by the way, we will be talking about tomorrow morning starting at 7. Mike Ward and I for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Our leadoff guest, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. Got questions over the last couple weeks about how I thought people say, Sean, how do you think it's going to affect snapper season, this shutdown and coronavirus?
Okay. Very important.
Yes. Well, for a lot of us it is, man. Yeah. I've got Scott Bannon coming on the show tomorrow. He's going to join us to talk about the what we're looking forward to. I could give you a sneak peek in a discussion I had with him. We're good.
Oh.
We're good, but it actually may play to the better for the length of the season. But we'll get into that discussion coming up tomorrow starting at 7. Plus, Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, Chuck Sykes, our buddy, is going to join us as well. So lots to talk about. That's tomorrow at 7, then plays again at 11 tomorrow night, plays at 7 Sunday morning and 10 Sunday evening. Plus, the podcast will go up probably 8:30, 8:45 tomorrow.
Do you think more or fewer people will be out fishing for snapper this year?
Fewer. I don't know. I bounce it both ways. Part of me says, all right, right now more people are getting out because I think by then we'll be back to work. I mean, by what the governor says. If it would be happening now, I think there would be more people because people have other hobbies. I don't know why you would, but other than fishing, they have other hobbies, and they maybe normally go do those, and they fish sometimes. Now they can't be around other groups. So I think there's more people now, but if we're back to work, I think there will be fewer because things will have been disrupted enough. And if there are fewer people go, those of y'all that don't study this, we get a tonnage allotment by the feds, and the state sets the season and we use the snapper app and all that to determine how many pounds a day are being caught that determines the length of the season. Well, if fewer people go, or there's weather issues that keep people from going, fewer snapper caught, then the season can last longer. But listen, we'll do all that tomorrow on the Outdoor Show. Mm-hmm. Starts at 7 here at FM Talk 106.5. All right. Got to get this update because I already got it, y'all. I'm minutes ahead of you because Dalton broke the news to me during the break. The latest on Kim Jong-un and his health. We were told at the beginning of the week he was in critical condition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were. And the president actually spoke about this yesterday, I believe, and he talked a little bit about it on Tuesday also. So we had that report that originally came from Reuters that said that Kim Jong-un, the dictator in North Korea, may be seriously ill, gravely ill, after a surgery gone wrong. That was pretty much immediately... Reuters also reported after that South Korea, who I think is probably keeping as close or closer tabs on Kim Jong-un's whereabouts than anyone except the United States. It's imperative that South Korea knows what's going on in North Korea. They said that there were no reports that Kim Jong-un was gravely ill. And then yesterday, it seems like President Trump backed what South Korea was saying and pushed back on this report that he is sick and said he thinks that the report was incorrect and that he had heard that it was based on old documents. So according to the president and according to South Korea, they think that Kim Jong-un's probably not near his deathbed right now, on his deathbed. Trump said, we have a good relationship with North Korea. I have a good relationship with Kim Jong-un, and I hope he's okay. So that's one thing that the president said. But, and I've also read that they're talking about who would be in line for the throne if Kim Jong-un were to pass. And there was some talk about his sister, who I guess is pretty important in the administration over there. But this being North Korea, I'm not sure they would take too kindly to a woman taking over as the new leader of North Korea. So then they were saying, Kim Jong-un's children are too young right now to lead. I mean, he's only, I think, 35 or 38 years old. I think the stat I found yesterday is that He's 5'7" and weighs way over.
What is it?
Weighs well over 300 pounds.
Wow.
Not in the best condition, but according to the president and according to South Korea, Kim Jong-un, not as ill as we originally thought.
I get the joke. All right. So there's your North Korea news headlines as delivered by Dalton Norwig. Jim and Sims says, I guess responding to Ricky, how are they bailing out big business if they kill the dollar? Well, Jim, quit pointing out facts like that. But they are bailing. I mean, there's a bailout of everybody going on. They're panicked from big business to small business. They're panicked. But yeah, killing the dollar brings down the fortunes of too many that are in control. So let's see.
And I also read that I think the administration or whoever divvies and doles out those funds to the big businesses, that they're now going to list which businesses get what percentage of the bailout. So that will at least be on some kind of form so you can check it out to make sure that, I mean, I'm sure some nefarious things will still go on, but just to know who's getting the money.
Well, but, you know, part of a libertarian argument here, unpopular one, but not for the colleges. The universities have the endowment, but let's talk about for the businesses. Why is a job associated with, and believe me, I'm a small business. We're a small business here, so I'm goring my own ox. But why are the jobs associated with Ruth's Chris or Shake It Up or whatever it is?
Shake it up, whatever it is.
Is that, but why are those jobs less important than the jobs that emanate here at FM Talk 106.5? Why? Just because with now, if you can show that this place, the problem is this loan's being made not based on need, but just overall.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. And those companies are going to, you know, they got better people to take advantage of it. They had a better suite of people. They have a whole department and a wing to do this, where small businesses, we're all trying to do this with our bankers and our accountant and trying to figure this out. And I told you, I was filling out sheets while I was doing a show and printing things and correcting things. I think more people are like me, but our jobs are no more American jobs than theirs, even though there are more of us in small business than any other, as hiring, than any other sector.
Yeah, I was looking. Shake Shack, they do not franchise stores. Ruth's Chris does franchise stores out to people. It's a $150,000 franchise fee to get one. And I think that's an important distinction to make. You know, if you're franchising stores, that makes whoever buys that store or a few stores, that makes them a local business owner there in that city where they have the store. So I think you can have a couple different discussions. If it's one huge corporation that owns all of the stores itself, that's a different discussion.
Yeah, when you start talking about franchises, you're talking about it's small business.
Right, exactly.
All right, got to wrap it up for now. And great text. We'll try to get some of these texts when we all gather back up at noon today for Midday Mobile. Mike Gallagher on the way next. Remember, online, fmtalk1065.com, and check us out Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.